Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle, it is FFC, all a part of the Sports Grid Radio Network. He is Scott Wetzel. I am Ben Stevens. Into the early stages of this NFL offseason. Some drama, I guess we could report today around the National Football League. The franchise tag tender window is open for the next 2 weeks, 13 days to be exact, Tuesday, March 5th, but no real action as of yet. As Scott said, yesterday was the expected outcome. In further reaction, Scott, to the change in format for the college football playoff moving forward in 2024, the expanded field of 12, the 5+7 model that we will further explain here on this Wednesday. A lot to get to over this next hour up until 1 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah, a little bounty hunting perhaps with the Las Vegas Raiders, which might not be the worst thing in the world, which we can get into here in a little bit. The NFL players also been calling for relaxed rules on gambling, which I think you would just open up a Pandora's box to problems. I understand why the NFL doesn't want the players to gamble, but we get into that a little bit as well since this is a gambling show. It's kind of just the lull here, right, before we get into really the draft stuff. So just kind of figure out what the NFL wants to do with some of these players. A lot of pending free agents that they have to make decisions on, especially at the quarterback position. So not so much busy for the fan, but it is busy for these organizations for sure.
Yeah, absolutely so. They are starting to make their determinations into what their future is moving forward. First and foremost, it's the first overall pick in the 2024 NFL draft and the organization that holds that, the Chicago Bears. We'll get to that in just a second. We welcome in our Sports Grid Radio audience here on Sirius XM channel 159. 159 is the home for Sports Grid Radio on Sirius XM. He is Scott Wetzel. I am Ben Stevens. It is Football Full Circle. I mentioned some off-season drama off the field and in the realm of social media. It was made apparent, Scott, by some that have their nose to the brimstone yesterday that where things stand on Instagram for Justin Fields, the current Bears quarterback. Justin Fields no longer follows the Chicago Bears on Instagram, nor does his dog Uno. However, the native of the Atlanta area does follow Kyle Pitts, Drake London, and Bijan Robinson. Of course, the young and talented members of the Atlanta Falcons offense. Scott, do you put any salt, any worth into this reporting? I say that in air quotes. You can't see it. It's a radio show. But into this reporting that Justin Fields no longer follows the Chicago Bears on Instagram.
You know, it all depends on what you mean by what do I put into it. I think the Bears have told him he's going to be traded? No, I don't think they specifically said that, but I think they probably have let it be known. You know, actions speak louder than words, as the saying goes. You know, all this scuttlebutt about what they're going to do with the number one overall pick, this, that, what have you. I think he sees the writing on the wall. And he just says, you know what, I'm going to get out before they kick me out. One of those things. So I'm going to show them. I'm not going to let them trade me thinking, okay, this is out of the blue for me. I'm going to fight, you know, fire the first salvo. So I'll, you know, no longer follow you. We've seen goofy things when players do this before, right? I mean, then when they re-sign him or they make a commitment to him, then it would be like, well, I just made a little mistake, or that wasn't me. I was hacked, or I was just cleaning out my account. You know, he'll make some excuse. So from that standpoint, I don't think he's going to be there next year, and I think he sees that as well.
Yeah, I think so as well. We have said multiple times, Scott, both you and I, what we believe the Chicago Bears should do, what we believe the Bears will do with that number one overall pick. I think the actual drama, Scott, is not if Justin Fields is the starting quarterback in Chicago next year. It's if Justin Fields is a member of the roster. Unless the Bears release him, which would be asinine, he is still under contract next year. So the Bears are trying to, I would estimate right now with GM Ryan Poles, get a feel of his market value, what they can get in return. He was the 11th overall pick in the 2021 NFL draft. Is he going to get back a first-round selection? No. Could it be a day two selection? Could it be a mid-round selection, anywhere from the third to fifth rounds? Maybe for Chicago to get some assets and capital back in return for Justin Fields. So I ask you, Scott, what do you think Justin Fields' trade value is for the Bears and out there around the NFL?
I think they will get a number one, Ben. I really do. Wow. I can't help. Yeah, I'd be surprised. In fact, I'd go so far as to say I'd be surprised. And if I didn't get a number one, then I'd just keep him on my roster. You know what? Head coach, it's your issue. We're going to draft whoever we end up drafting. You know, Caleb Williams probably, but let's say it is Williams. We're drafting Williams. We want him to be the face of the franchise, but we really don't know if he's completely ready to be a starter right now, right? We kind of got a win-now team. We made some progress last year. You figure it out. You're the head coach. If I can't get a number one, there's got to be, Ben, some GM, some head coach that's saying to himself, he showed some promise. He's obviously rough around the feathers, but I believe in him still. I don't think he's failed enough where you can't get one guy that says, listen, we may be giving up a number one, but we're going to know right away if this is good. We don't have to make a 2 or 3 year commitment to Justin Fields. He's got enough experience to know, okay, if our guys can't get him to be an NFL quarterback in year number one, well, then, you know what? We wasted a first round draft choice, but at least we could move on. So because of that, I think they do get a number one. And like I said, I really would be surprised if they didn't. There's got to be somebody. He's from the Georgia area, so people are saying the Falcons.
Yeah.
You know, maybe. There's 15 teams that quarterbacks are awful. That I can't help but think there's not one guy that's willing to give up a number one. Maybe it's going to be a late number one or a middle number one that says, okay, at least we got an experienced guy, and hopefully we can change him and make him a better
player. Yeah, so I do think it's interesting, right? Much like a car, once a quarterback has played a single snap or even is just out of his own draft class, his value lessens greatly, unless Justin Fields had taken over the reins in Chicago, won Offensive Rookie of the Year, and was a solidified starting quarterback. That is not going to be the case. Is there belief that he could be a successful quarterback elsewhere in the NFL? I think so, and I think there will be coaches around the league that will have some attention, and he will garner some respect, that being Justin Fields, and thus value in trade markets. I don't think he's going to go for cents on the dollar, but for what he was in 2021, now nearly 4 years ago, I'm not entirely sure. At least at the start of next season, it will be his fourth NFL campaign. It's not necessarily, Scott, the same exact thing by any means, but Trey Lance was the third overall pick in that 2021 NFL draft. He had the injury issues, but was the starter in San Francisco to begin 2022. He was traded for a fourth round pick, of course, before this past season started to the Dallas Cowboys. Justin Fields should garner more attention and notoriety in trade markets than that. And I do actually think, Scott, although the social media drama might be slightly overblown with the unfollowing on Instagram of the Bears account, the idea that the Atlanta native or the Atlanta area native narrative at the very least, would maybe make a really good fit for the Atlanta Falcons, I think does have some legs. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break, because the one thing missing for the Falcons winning the NFC South the season ago was even adequate, maybe mediocre quarterback play. I think Justin Fields can provide that with a lot of talent offensively for the Falcons to take advantage of under new head coach Raheem Morris. We'll have the conversation up next on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle. Scott, one of the first conversations around the National Football League that will have to have an answer at a point this offseason. What are the Bears going to do with Justin Fields? And thus, what is Chicago going to do with that first overall pick in the 2024 NFL Draft? Of course, it was a similar conversation a year ago. The Bears elected to trade that first overall pick to the Carolina Panthers. They moved back, eventually selected 10th overall in the opening round. The Panthers took Bryce Young first overall. I don't believe that Justin Fields has shown enough to remain the starter in Chicago, and I think the Bears are going to use that first overall pick on Caleb Williams. So that's the Bears component of it all. But for Justin Fields, what is next in his NFL career? We talked about the social media drama on Instagram, no longer following the Bears, but he does follow Bijan Robinson, Kyle Pitts, Drake London, members, of course, of the young core of the Atlanta Falcons offense. And there is just the natural idea. They know each other. They're all young. They've played around the same time. But Justin Fields, of course, is a native of the Atlanta area. Could he return home, a homecoming of sorts, for his next destination in the NFL? Would that be a beneficial relationship for both parties, making the Falcons better offensively and lead to sustained success for Justin Fields? I would argue yes, Scott, and I actually think the most likely landing spot for Fields this offseason very well could be Atlanta.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they have some weapons. So from his aspect, okay, I got guys I can throw the ball to. I certainly can run the football. I might not be asked to run myself 15, 20 times a game in order to have success. Halfway decent defense at times in a division that's winnable. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good spot for both. I really do. And you have the weapons, unlike Chicago in some people's eyes, where, okay, if he comes in and he isn't any good this year, like I said, I don't think you would need to wait another year to figure out if he really is good or not. You probably will have 2 years. I imagine the Bears will pick up the fifth-year option. I think that would encourage Atlanta to trade for him, knowing you had him locked up for 2 years. But you have enough there with the Falcons to know, okay, we'll find out. And if it costs us a number one, then you know what? It costs us a number one, but at least, you know, the upside to Justin Fields, to me, Ben, is a lot higher than think of some of the other quarterbacks that might be out there. Mac Jones, Desmond Ridder, Zach Wilson, Mitch Trubisky, even Gardner Minshew. I still think, and I'm not a Fields guy, but I still think I would take my chance with Justin Fields. And if it meant giving up a number one, then you know what? It is what it is. I'm going to give up a number one. Maybe be a conditional number one. Maybe I can get a number three back, something back, so it's not just straight one for one. But I would make the move.
Yeah, I mean, I would as well. And where the Atlanta Falcons draft right now, Scott, is eighth overall. You would think, as we have laid out, if Chicago uses that first pick, but whoever even moves up will take Caleb Williams, more than likely number one. Washington currently drafts second, New England at third. I have said I think we're going to see a run of quarterbacks, one, two, and three. Do the Falcons feel more optimistic about reaching at eight, maybe being involved in any trade talks for those top three QBs? Could they reach for a Michael Penix Jr.? For a Bo Nix, who, by the way, I think are both the same age as Justin Fields. Would they look for a J.J. McCarthy? I think it makes more sense for them to go after Justin Fields, trade a second-round draft pick, a third-round draft pick, a fourth-round draft pick, maybe a slew of draft picks back to Chicago to get Justin Fields. It adds more draft capital for the Bears, who are going to have control of this offseason, the most cap room all around the National Football League, and I think would provide a tremendous benefit for Atlanta. First year, not first year head coach, but new head coach once again in Atlanta, Raheem Morris. Don't love the hire for the Falcons necessarily, but it is a new regime in the ATL. Scott, there was a lot of optimism for the Falcons last year. Win total 8.5, over had the juice. They could compete in a bad NFC South to win the divisional title in the final month. Atlanta had some opportunities to claim the NFC South divisional crown. But ultimately, Scott, the thing I was not optimistic about, the reason I was not nearly as optimistic as others in the NFL marketplace, and ultimately as we saw it play out, was because of the quarterback position for Atlanta. Desmond Ridder, Taylor Heinicke, Desmond Ridder again, Taylor Heinicke again. It didn't matter. I didn't believe the quarterback could facilitate or distribute to the talented offensive pieces around. Obviously, Bijan Robinson's utilization and his usage in the offense was an interesting component with Arthur Smith, who is no longer the head coach in the ATL. But Tyler Allgeier is still there. Drake London, Kyle Pitts, if he ever emerges into the fourth overall pick that he was. There is a lot of talent in Atlanta waiting to be unlocked by a good quarterback, and I still believe Justin Fields can be that.
Yeah, what the Falcons and teams in those positions, Ben, have to really consider, it's not so much the first round pick. It is, do we want Justin Fields or do we want Bo Nix? You said it. Do we want Justin Fields or would we rather have Michael Penix Jr.? Because I think both would be there, especially at 8. You know, they may have to move up one or two slots, but, you know, I don't think we'll have 5 quarterbacks taken in the first 6 positions. So somewhere along the line, one of those two guys. That would be like, okay, and we get Nix or Penix Jr. for 3 more years because they're going to be on their rookie contracts, whereas Fields is entering year number 4. We're getting these guys at year number 1. But they tried that with Riddick. So, I mean, or with Ridder, rather. Do they want to go down that road again, or do they want to at least get a somewhat proven guy? It's taking me a long time to buy into Bo Nix, but, and I know different regime, different anything, but I can't get Justin Herbert out of my head, you know? A similar career in that, you know, he was very good, obviously, in college, but there were some little question marks, and I just wonder if that's the same thing with Nix. But it's taken me a long time to buy in, but I think I actually like him better than Penix Jr., who's just an injury waiting to happen. I would stay away from him as much as I love him. But would you rather have Nix or Justin Fields? That's the question.
Yeah, it is interesting. Bo Nix, by the way, is 23 years old as of right now. He actually turns 24 in just 4 days on February 25th. Michael Penix Jr., in terms of what his age is, also 23, will be 24 by his rookie season. His birthday is in May. When you look at Justin Fields, his age at this moment, he is 24 as of right now. He will be 25 by the time next year starts, his birthday in early March. So the age groupings, of course, similar for a guy that will enter year number 4 and already has 3 years of NFL experience under the belt for guys that will be rookies. And Scott, that's part of the conversation in terms of value for QBs as well. At the end of their rookie contract, if you keep Michael Penix Jr. as a first round pick for all 5 years, he's going to be 29. Same for Bo Nix. That's a lot to tie into your future face of the franchise. Of course, you can play quarterback if you're successful for quite some time, but it's just part of those conversations. It will be interesting, Scott, to look at those two quarterbacks and even J.J. McCarthy, who has a lot of steam around him, as the next group of 3 outside of the big 3, Caleb Williams, Drake May, and Jaden Daniels. In that order, Caleb, Drake, and Jaden, the favorites to go 1, 2, and 3, respectively. To draft Bo Nix, the favorite right now, the Denver Broncos at plus 300. The Broncos have the 12th overall pick in the opening round of the 2024 NFL draft. The favorites to draft J.J. McCarthy, 5-1 for Minnesota, 5-1 for Atlanta, 8 for Atlanta, as we shared, 11th overall for the Minnesota Vikings. And the favorites to get Michael Penix Jr. at 4-1, the Seattle Seahawks, who draft 16th overall. Again, these are not minus money, even approaching even money favorites, Scott, to take these guys. Still pretty big, hefty plus money prices. But I think we are starting to, at least at this moment, cultivate an idea that we could see 6 quarterbacks taken in the opening 32 picks that first round of 2024.
Yeah, and then there's always generally one surprise. Some, you know, some kid from North Dakota State, right? You might even get more than that. I'm curious to know when the odds come out on what the number will be for quarterbacks in the first round. Teams reach. You have to reach. I've had people, you know, have discussions with people, right? Why? He's not a first-round pick. No, probably not. But, you know, if you want to be able to go get a guy, you're not going to get that guy in the second and third round like maybe he should be. There's going to be some team that's going to reach up and just grab a guy, whether it's to put him on the bench, or whether it's like a Trey Lance with San Francisco, or it's going to be a guy that just, you know, is ready to play, then you don't really realize it.
Yeah, I completely agree with that as well. I would say the number right now is probably 5.5. The under has the juice in terms of the amount of quarterbacks taken in the opening round of the 2024 NFL draft. We'll talk a little bit more NFL offseason before diving into college football up next on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
The franchise tag window is now underway in the National Football League. As of 4 p.m. Eastern yesterday, Tuesday, February 20th through Tuesday, March 5th, that two-week window, if there is an eligible candidate on an NFL roster, that specific NFL team can place the franchise or transition tag on that individual player. Scott, some people around the NFL might know about the contract situation of Kirk Cousins and think Kirk is eligible for the franchise tag in Minnesota. The Vikings might want to do that, just keep him for another year. That's not the case. Kirk Cousins' contract is designed to not be void until March 13th. That would fall outside of the franchise tag window. So he will be a free agent if that contract is void and there is no extension prior with Minnesota. So my question to you, Scott, is where does Kirk Cousins play his NFL football in 2024?
Boy, I don't know, but I will say this. He'll be the highest paid player in NFL history. I'm not saying he deserves it by any stretch, but there are way too many teams out there that need quarterbacks who think there are win now teams. I mean, we just even mentioned the Atlanta Falcons. Can you imagine Kirk Cousins on the Atlanta Falcons? Out of all the guys that are available or might be available, right? Whether it's Justin Fields or Russell Wilson or Baker Mayfield or even Gardner Minshew, who had a terrific, you know, halfway decent season for the Colts. You know, he is the clear cut number one guy. So there's going to be four or five teams, no doubt, calling him up. And if Danny Nichols, as I like to call him, got $40 million for the Giants, then you know Kirk Cousins is asking for $55-$60. He's going to go for the top, and I think he'll get it. Does Minnesota want to re-up for that and spend that kind of crazy money? You know, they might be the one team, obviously, that has the inside track, but they also might be the one team that says, you know what, we've been down this road. It hasn't worked. So let someone else throw money at Kirk Cousins.
I
don't know.
I was going to say, Scott, I agree with you, right? That floor now for the quarterback market is the $40 million of annual average value in salary that Daniel Jones was paid or extended last season for the New York Giants, which means that Kirk Cousins, wherever he goes, even if that stays in Minneapolis, is going to get probably 50 at bare minimum. We have already heard, Scott, the rumors starting to circulate around what the contract numbers are going to be for Dak Prescott or maybe Tua Tagovailoa of the Miami Dolphins when those contract extensions are coming up. For Tua, that's happening right now. For Dak, it could be either this offseason if they want to be proactive or next offseason before he becomes a free agent. But if Joe Burrow is currently the highest paid player in NFL history, again, by AAV, annual average value in terms of that per year annual salary. There's different cap hits. There's different overall cash that is paid out based on incentives and bonus structure, yada, yada, in terms of how contracts actually work in the National Football League. But in terms of what we see, Scott, the breaking news updates and those big AAV numbers, that's the easiest way to conceptualize it. Joe Burrow signed, of course, right before the season started as the opening kick in Arrowhead between the Chiefs and the Lions for the 2023 NFL season. It was Joe Burrow signing a $55 million per year, 5-year deal with the Cincinnati Bengals. That is the highest paid player as of this moment in NFL history. Is Kirk Cousins going to get more than that? Maybe. Is Dak? Probably. Is Tua Tagovailoa? It's a possibility as well. And it's not because Tua or Dak are better than Joe Burrow or Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson or Jalen Hurts or whatever the list might be. You're not. They're not. It's very clear to see. But it's just where the inflation rate is going for the most important position individually in sports, and that's the quarterback in the National Football League.
Yeah, and you can make a case or whatever Cousins signs for. Let's say it's $55 billion. He sets the record. Then we got Trevor Lawrence coming up the following year. Now, is Trevor Lawrence great like people thought he was going to be out of college? No, but, you know, he's in that, you know, that range of, yeah, Jacksonville certainly wants to keep him. So it's just going to go up, up, and up. It is amazing. Like, there doesn't seem to be any cap. There doesn't seem to be like a – you certainly would never be able to take the NFL owners to court, Ben, and offer up collusion like they did with the baseball owners, because every single one just wants to keep on re-upping the other one. You know, the salary cap goes up $3, $4, $5 million, and automatically, okay, let's just basically give it to the wide receivers or quarterbacks, and we'll keep on bumping that up. I'll never understand why GMs don't go to the agents of these quarterbacks and say, the best quarterback is Patrick Mahomes, right? Your guy is great. We love you. We want him on the team. But is he really Patrick Mahomes? No. So Mahomes makes 38, 40 million, whatever it is. So we're going to start there, and we're going to go down. We're not going to go up because he's the best. And I don't care if the structure has changed. You know, I don't care if the salary cap is higher. It doesn't matter. You know, we're going to give that to – I got 50 other players I got to pay. So we're going to go Mahomes, and we're going to go down. And yet – they don't. They go Mahomes and they go up. And we got all these quarterbacks that aren't half of what Patrick Mahomes is, making just as much, if not more, money. Crazy.
Yeah, it is. It is absolutely insane. Now, in terms of those destinations for Kirk Cousins, I still think Minnesota would probably be the betting favorite, if you will, to retain Kirk Cousins, because I'm not entirely sure what their plan would be outside of that. Again, as we shared in the recent segment, J.J. McCarthy, the team's most likely to draft him in the NFL draft. The Vikings and the Falcons both at a 5-1 number. Again, that's not a lock. That's not an odds-on favorite. That's not even less than a $2 favorite, nowhere close to minus money. But the Vikings do have the 11th overall pick in the 2024 NFL draft. Would they take their quarterback of the future there? Is that the plan in Minneapolis? Potentially for the Vikings moving forward. I still think Kirk Cousins, maybe the incumbent just because of that, still a potential landing spot is staying in Minnesota. Of course, Kirk last year tore his Achilles and is coming off of that injury. He played 8 games. He still ranks in the top 20 in terms of touchdown passes from this previous season, despite only playing less than half the year. For me, Scott, when you look at Kirk Cousins, if it's not Minnesota, I think there's going to be a lot of takers. We talked about the Falcons with Justin Fields. I think the Falcons would be in the running for Kirk Cousins as well. Any of the teams that maybe in that 11 to 20 range, like the Vikings, if it's not them, like the Broncos, like the Raiders, like maybe the Seattle Seahawks, I think they could make a run at Kirk Cousins. Would the Pittsburgh Steelers be in consideration? What do the New York Giants do? I think they already have too much money invested in the quarterback spot. I doubt they would make a play at Kirk Cousins, but I do think there are going to be takers and maybe multiple takers for Kirk Cousins' services if it is not remaining in Minnesota.
Yeah, maybe even a return to the Washington Commanders. You know, they're probably in a need for a quarterback. Patriots are in a need for a quarterback. It's all kind of – it's funny. I was looking at that, and Broncos and Raiders kind of jumped off the page for me as well. You know, you got Sean Payton with Denver. He's not looking, I don't think, to you know, build a quarterback and hope that you have the right one. I think he went after thinking he's going to win now, realized it's not going to be Russell Wilson. So that would be an interesting – same thing with the Raiders. You know, you got a lot of teams, Ben, that aren't good that are – win now teams, though. You know, you don't have too many like young and up and coming Carolina Panther, you know, Houston Texans teams that are actually good, but they're young. You got a lot of teams that like veteran players and older owners and Arthur Blank. You know, I mean, the way he read his rhetoric about how his quarterback play was awful this year, you know, does he really want to go down the road and have another questionable guy versus bringing in a Kirk Cousins who he could pretty much count on to, you know, throw for 30, 35 touchdown passes? That would be interesting. But there are some teams, and that's why I say there are so many. He's going to be able to name his price, even coming off the Achilles injury.
Yeah, I think so as well. That will be a very interesting component of this quarterback conversation this offseason. The Vikings actually don't have anybody, I believe, to franchise tag. I don't think Danielle Hunter qualifies as well for Minnesota. Their big question this offseason, how much is Justin Jefferson going to make in his contract extension? We talk about maybe Kirk Cousins being the highest ever paid quarterback, which is crazy to say. I think Justin Jefferson, if it's not him, it's Ja'Marr Chase. They are going to reset the wide receiver market as well in terms of those contract extensions, Scott, that will be paid out here very soon.
Yeah, and Chase is the interesting one, even though everyone's talking about T. Higgins this year, but it's almost like they should go to Chase first and say, all right, well, what's it going to take to get you re-signed? And then we'll see how much we have left over for T. Higgins. But the wide receiver spot over the last really 2 years, year and a half, has kind of ballooned. Top guy makes over $20 million now, so the going rate is 20-plus for a wide receiver. It's not cheap on offense, man. These offensive guys are making a killing. Yeah. Pittsburgh Steelers would be another team. Kirk Cousins on Pittsburgh with some of those weapons and all those quarterbacks in the AFC North, right? Is Pittsburgh really going to go into next year thinking that they have the quarterback on their roster? And Kenny Pickett? I don't know. That's year number three. I'd be surprised.
Me as well. I mean, Kenny Pickett, what a wild ride he has already had in the NFL. A new offensive coordinator, of course, in Pittsburgh, in Arthur Smith. What will that relationship be like? But Kenny Pickett couldn't even start over Mitch Trubisky nor Mason Rudolph in a playoff game a season ago. That's pretty tough to come back from as the face of a franchise or a starting quarterback into year number three. And let's not forget Kenny Pickett under contract for 4 seasons. It would be at the end of this third year following 2024 for the Steelers to decide that they wanted to pick up his fifth year option. I do not see that being the case unless something greatly changes next year. For the Patriots, third overall draft pick, Gerard Mayo has said they are going to focus more than likely in the quarterback position. They will be without, it's a changing time in Foxborough over the last half decade and certainly into 2024. Bill Belichick, of course, no longer the head coach. And their special teams superstar, 10-time Pro Bowler Matthew Slater, Scott, yesterday afternoon announcing his retirement from the NFL. When you think about great special teams players, Matthew Slater was always that guy, probably one of Bill Belichick's favorites in New England because Bill loves talking about special teams, and Matthew Slater got the job done in that unit for a very long time up in Foxborough. Some college football playoff conversations next for college football in the ever-changing and altered landscape starting in 2024. What does the new CFP format mean for Notre Dame? We'll talk about it next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle, it is FFC. He is Scott Wetzel. I am Ben Stevens. Of course, Scott, one of the big news around the world of football yesterday was the change in format to the expanded field of 12 in the college football playoff. 2024 means many things in collegiate athletics, of course, all driven by CFB. Conference realignment, the Pac-12 is no more. The Big Ten adds Oregon, UCLA, USC, and Washington, Oklahoma, and Texas, the new additions to the SEC. The Big 12 is formatted after the collapse of the Pac-12. Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, and Utah join that conference. The ACC really remains as we have known it, but there might be some schools, Florida State, that aren't too pleased with remaining in that league at this time. But the Power 5 is no more. It is the Power 4, and maybe more so the Power 2. Because, Scott, when we learned about the 12-team expansion of the college football playoff that was set to begin in 2024, when all this came out, there was still 5 Power 5 conferences. So it was a 6-plus-6 format. 6 automatic qualifiers to the 6 highest-ranked conference champions, 6 at-large berths. Now, without the Power 5 and really just a Power 4, it is 5 automatic berths for the 5 highest-ranked conference champions, and, of course, 7 at large bids available to the CFP. We broke down the format yesterday, Scott, but in the 24 hours since this news broke, have you had any different reactions or any further thoughts to this new 5+7 in the 12-team era?
You know, I just, like I said yesterday, I don't understand why they want to include that fifth conference, that extra conference. And to put it all into perspective, Liberty right now, we went over this yesterday, but just to kind of put it even more, Liberty right now is the highest team from the fifth different conference outside of the, you know, SEC, Big Ten, ACC, and Big 12. They are 500-1. They're the 46th highest team according to the boys in Vegas. So if you just go by their rankings, that means, okay, they're going to get in. 11 other teams will get in. There will be 35 other teams, Ben, ranked higher than Liberty that will not get in. But because Liberty is in the Conference USA, we just use them as the example, as the best fifth conference, they're going to get an automatic bid. I don't understand that. I mean, you're going to have 35 teams, you know, yelling and screaming about why are they in, even though they have one or two losses, and we're sitting here at 10-2 in the pick a conference in the Big Ten, and I got a ton of great victories, and yet we're not going to get in, but Liberty is. You know, I just don't understand why they wanted to open up that can of worms.
Correct. And I'm not sure, Scott, in 2 years' time, when 2026 rolls around and officially the TV contract that the college football playoff has had with ESPN comes up for renewal. Obviously, those conversations are already starting to take place. There was a thought that the CFP Board of Governors Board of Regents, whatever it's called, would then give out some of the TV rights, maybe have a split if we are going to 12 teams in multiple more games now in terms of quarterfinal round, opening round, then semifinals, and the national championship, that there would be two broadcast partners, Fox being the main one with its ties to the Big Ten, Disney/ESPN with the SEC, the college football playoff would want to expand to a second TV partner. If that is the case, and even if not, I think you're going to have that big two, the Big Ten and the SEC, maybe trying to get rid of the idea of automatic qualifiers and automatic bids for a conference champion. But at least for the next 2 years, the 5+7 format is what we will see for the expanded field of 12. And it's not a guarantee necessarily, Scott, although we know the reality of college football. It's not a guarantee. It's not like it's the four power conferences that earn a bid, the SEC, the Big Ten, the ACC, and the Big 12. Theoretically, it could be the SEC, the Big Ten, the Big 12, and then the highest ranked MAC team and AAC team, but that's not how ratings, rankings in the AP poll or CFP history have ever truly played out. As we shared yesterday, Scott, and I went through this at the end of the show as well, here's what the projected 12-team field would look like based on the national championship odds right now on the FanDuel Sportsbook. Again, a reminder, there are not conference title odds out just yet, so I use the shortest national championship prices from respective conferences to deem who would be that conference champion. For the SEC, Georgia has the shortest national title price. They are the favorite. So I give Georgia the SEC championship. For the Big Ten, that's Ohio State. Second best price, they win the Big Ten title. For the ACC, that's Florida State at 22-1. Ninth best national championship price, but the shortest out of the ACC. And for the Big 12, K-State and Utah, both at 60-1. Tied for the 17th best number in the country, shortest out of the Big 12. So let's call it Utah. So the four buys would be, based on ranking and national championship price, Georgia 1, Ohio State 2, Florida State 3, Utah 4. Again, Utah is the fourth-ranked team in this seeding list of the 12-team CFP, and yet they have the tied for 17th best price to win a national championship. That also might upset some people, but the highest four-ranked conference champions will earn those opening round buys. It doesn't matter, Scott, if it's Georgia and Alabama, 1-2 in the SEC championship, and Georgia wins, and Alabama in the, you know, would then fall to fourth in the country in the CFP rankings to determine the 12-team field, we would be reseeded where Alabama would have to fall outside of the top four because they did not win a conference championship. That is to be said. So I quickly run through this list. 1, Georgia, 2, Ohio State, 3, Florida State, 4, Utah. Then the at-larges would be 5, Texas, where that stands at the moment, 6, is Alabama. Beyond that, we go down to 7 as I pull up this list here. My apologies for the slight delay. Let me get back to it. I lost my page. Here we are, filling time. I got it. 5 would be Texas. 6 would be Oregon, 7, Alabama. 8, LSU. 9, Michigan. 10, Ole Miss. 11 is either Notre Dame or Penn State. And then, as Scott said, Liberty would be the hot, has the shortest price to win a national championship at 500-1 for any team not in the Power 4, the ACC, Big 10, Big 12, or SEC. They would be that 12 seed. So it would be Texas versus Liberty, Oregon versus Notre Dame, Bama versus Ole Miss, LSU versus Michigan in those opening round games, which the only thing I'm really happy about there, Scott, is those games would be played on campus. On campus, college football playoff games in late December in some of the most electric atmospheres and historic and storied venues in the sport. That's a really cool change in this format as well.
Yeah, and didn't Notre Dame in the contract negotiate that they could never get a bye because they always wanted a home game? Yeah, I mean, how crazy is that? Now, if you needed any more of an example about how this is all about money, that is it. You could be the number one undefeated greatest team in the history of mankind, Notre Dame, and they say, no, we don't want to buy because we want a home game. Crazy. You know, I'm going to answer my own question. Yeah, thinking about this, Ben. You know what they did? They made sure that they protected the Big Four. And so when they included the Conference USA or the MAC or whatever champion being the top five, getting an automatic bid, that was the Big Four's way of saying, all right, you know what, if we have a year where, yeah, well, maybe we're 10-3 or 9-3 and we wouldn't necessarily be in, we got to make sure we're going to get in. We have to make sure we're not going to be the sixth worst. You know, the Big 12 or ACC or Big 10 SEC is not going to be the sixth best conference. They might fall to the fifth best, but they made sure that they are getting at least one team in. So that's probably why. They're going to sacrifice having a Liberty in there just to make sure that one of their Big Fours always get in. And then the other thing with the conference champion, I kind of like that. I don't know how you feel about that, but at least it does bring integrity to that conference championship. So if you have an Alabama number one, we'll just say, and a Georgia number two squaring off in the SEC championship, you really could make the case they're playing for nothing. Both win, lose, or draw, they're both going to get byes. So they made sure that, okay, you're going to have to win your conference championship to be in the top four, even if it means you, number two Alabama, dropping to number five in our lists, even though you're the second best team, because we just have to keep the integrity of the conference championships.
Correct. And there is the reality of what we know in college football, where some feel it's a semi-professional league and is already probably there. I think there will be a time, Scott, in the next decade and a half, that we get to the idea of conferences and divisions that look geographically like the former conferences that we had before all of this realignment, and we play at the Power 5 or Power 4 level versus everybody else. I do believe we will get to that point in college football. For right now, this is that format where the reward of winning a conference, even these changed conference fields, and having that conference championship will always earn you that opening round bye. One less game to play on your path to a national championship. You won't get a home game necessarily, because starting in the quarterfinal round, when there are 6 games left to play before the national championship, we will rotate between the CFP Bowls, the New Year's Six Bowls, as we have known them over the last 10 years, and the national championship game will always be played at a neutral site. So let's talk about Notre Dame, Scott. One of 8 teams in the 10-year history of the 4-team format of the college football playoff, one of 8 teams in all of FBS college football to have multiple CFP appearances. And yet, in this new format, 5+7, as of this moment, Notre Dame will never, and I can say that right now, Notre Dame will never be one of the top 4 teams, because they are not a part of a conference and thus cannot win a conference championship. A lot of people have said, what does that do for Notre Dame? Are they screwed? I say no. This is what Notre Dame exactly wanted, as Scott laid out. And I actually think the at-large component with 7 bids now, as opposed to trying to find your way into a field of 4, benefits Notre Dame. They can never be one of the top 4 teams to get a bye in the opening round, but they can get into the college football playoff a little bit easier, and they can host a college football playoff game under the watchful eye of Touchdown Jesus. And again, in the odds that I used here, Scott, those national championship odds tied for the 10th best price with with Penn State, so they could either be one of those final at-large bids or just on the outside looking in. But there's an easier path, in my estimation, for the Fighting Irish to get into the CFP, regardless of the fact they can't be one of the top four teams to earn that opening round bye.
Yeah, and if they really ever change their mind on that, you know, the ACC would take them in a heartbeat, right? They in the ACC and all their other sports. So if they really thought, okay, they're going to get screwed for some reason, they could always do that. I agree. I don't think – listen, Notre Dame's pretty good when they schedule. They make their schedule out to, you know, be somewhat difficult depending on how good the teams that they're playing are. But I don't think they're going to have to go too crazy. You know, if you go 11-1 with seven at-large bids and you being the lone independent – I think it does. I agree with you. I think it becomes a little bit easier for Notre Dame to get into this thing versus being in a conference. I don't think this hurts them at all. You know, you play an extra game. I grant that, but they're not playing in a conference championship game. So for Notre Dame, that's probably not that big a deal. They're still playing right. The same amount as if you played in a conference championship. So I could see where they would like this situation.
Yeah, absolutely so. And, Scott, when you look at where things are from those conference odds and from the win totals that we already have out around the conferences in college football, there is going to be a spot. There are going to be multiple opportunities to drop games. Some might feel like it's a de-incentivizer for the regular season. I don't believe in it. It's just the nature of having to play in these super conferences. But there are going to be teams with two losses and maybe even with three. You'd have to be an SEC or Big Ten team, I think, to qualify. But there are going to be teams with two or three losses into the college football playoff that earn at-large bids. And I don't really think you can fault that. We had never seen a two-loss team make the 4-team college football playoff field. Might be different now. More on that thought up next on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
He is Scott Wetzel. I am Ben Stevens. Just a few more minutes here on Football Full Circle. So, Scott, I talked about this idea that in the 4-team format, in the 10-year history of the college football playoff, we never once saw a 2-loss team make the CFP. There were conversations, there were debates at times, but never did a 2-loss team make the college football playoff in the 4-team format. Now with 12, I think we're going to see it, Scott, and I think it starts in 2024. It's just the nature of the landscape. When you play in an 18-team Big Ten that now has Oregon, UCLA, USC, and Washington, when you play in a 16-team SEC that adds in Oklahoma and Texas, having two losses in that conference is actually not going to be a bad thing. It might be highlighted. Having three losses might still keep you afloat in the college football playoff conversation. And Scott, I ran through the odds in terms of what the national championship prices say for a projected 12-team field in the CFP for this upcoming season. Five of those teams were from the SEC. Three were from the Big Ten. One was Notre Dame. One from the ACC, Florida State. One from the Big 12, it was Utah. And one from the Group of Five, now non-Power Four, that was Liberty. So that's a lot of SEC and Big 10 that will be featured in the CFP 12-team format moving forward.
Yeah, and we looked at, believe it or not, FanDuel actually even has over-unders posted for these teams for next season. And right, the SEC and the Big Ten only had two teams at 10.5. No 11.5 like we saw the last couple of years with Georgia. Two at 10.5. Alabama's 9.5. I mean, the thought of you're going to run through 10 of these games automatically and you're only going to have two really toughies, not the case. I mean, I just pulled up one real quickly, Florida. Florida's schedule, Miami, Georgia, at Texas, at Florida State, and oh, by the way, Texas A&M. Good grief. The champion of the SEC could have two losses easily.
I think Florida's 2024 football schedule is the hardest I have ever seen in college football. But it's a sign of the times with conference realignment and where things stand in college football. He's Scott Wetzel. I'm Ben Stevens. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Football Full Circle starting at noon Eastern.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then, add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3 quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.